And this is KPCW. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's 8:06 on this Tuesday, July 22nd. Currently 61 degrees under some cloudy skies here in Old Town Park City, 65 degrees in Heber City, again with some clouds. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Tuesday, Utah. It's time for your Wasatch Back forecast here. As we go throughout your Tuesday, we're looking at mostly sunny skies expected out there across the area. Looking at temperatures climbing into the lower 80s in Park City this afternoon with plenty of sunshine. The Heber Valley looking at lots of sunshine as well. Temperatures will be climbing into the upper 80s across the area. So definitely some warmer air beginning to build back into the area. As we go into your Wednesday, look for that sunshine to stick around across the region with temperatures in the 50s. Kicking off the day in Park City will be around 50 to kick off the day in the Heber Valley. High temperatures will climb into the low to mid 80s in Park City for your high on Wednesday afternoon, with temperatures climbing to around 90 degrees in the Heber Valley. As you go into your Pioneer Day on Thursday, it's a big day with a lot of outdoor activities expected. We're looking at mostly sunny to partly sunny skies expected across the area. There is a very tiny chance of a very small pop-up sprinkle or a shower developing in the afternoon, but I think most of the day will be dry. Temperatures will climb into the lower 80s in Park City with highs upper 80s to right around 90 again in the Heber Valley. As you move into your Friday, look for that mostly sunshine to return across the area with those highs back into the mid-80s in Park City and highs climbing to around 90 degrees in the Heber Valley. We're going to stick with those warm temperatures heading into the weekend as well, with temperatures climbing into the mid to upper 80s in Park City each afternoon with lots of sunshine and highs climbing into the low to mid-90s across most of the Heber Valley. So overall, any chance of rain will be very slim as we go into your Pioneer Day afternoon, but most of us will still remain dry. Otherwise, we're looking at very dry conditions and very warm conditions as we head into the rest of the week, into most of next week. Overall, the pattern looks to remain very summer-like as we go throughout the next 10 to 15 days. So expect more of the same across the region. Let's look at your forecast for the Wasatch Back. From the ABC Forecast Center, I'm meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Stay tuned. Coming up, I'll be checking in with Summit County Manager Shane Scott, along with Summit County Housing Authority Director Maddie McDonough, Park City Community Foundation Executive Director Joel Zero, and Board Member E.E. Sue with details about the Food Waste Collection Program, as well as some of the other community foundation programs ongoing. And finally, Recycle Utah General Manager and Jim Bedell, along with Carolyn War, with the latest on a location for a new center and some upcoming events. Well, a few things are changing for Summit County voters this season based on new state laws passed this year. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports the biggest change will be the deadline for mailing in your ballot.
Previously, Utah voters had to postmark their ballots by the day of the election to mail them in. A new state law is changing that this year. Now election workers will need to receive ballots by 8 p.m. on election day for them to count. That change begins with the August 12, 2025 primary. Summit County Clerk Eve Furse says there's no way to predict how long the mail will take and recommends voting early.
Or it has to actually be here by 8 o'clock. So if people are mailing in a ballot, they should mail it super early or put it in a drop box if they can't get it in early, or come vote in person.
The two other ways to vote are not changing: lining up in person by 8 p.m. on election day or placing a ballot in a drop box by 8 p.m. on election day. A couple of other changes are coming to Summit County specifically to comply with new Utah law deadlines by 2029. First says her office will start including a line on ballots where residents can opt in to receiving ballots by mail going forward. Utah law states voters will continue to receive mail-in ballots until 2029. After that, residents will need to opt in to receive one. The Summit County Clerk's Office is giving voters a chance to opt in early. The final change is the office will also start printing a section for voters to put their driver's license number or the last four digits of their Social Security number. Election officials are required to start printing that section by next year, and by 2029, it'll be the only way to match each ballot with each voter, replacing signature verification.
So it creates a slightly more objective way to look at whether someone's ballot should count or not.
Until 2029, election workers will be allowed to verify ballots by voter signature if the driver's license number or social are illegible or don't match what's on file. Four Summit County towns will have primary elections on August 12th, Park City, Colville, Francis, and Hennifer. The Summit County Clerk's Office tested its voting equipment for residents, the media, and some candidates July 21st. Staff said there were no issues with the voting machines or counters. For more on the legally required logic and accuracy test, visit kpcw.org. This year, clerks were hoping to demonstrate the iPads voters will use to check in at the polls. However, an error when uploading a sample voter database prevented that. Testing the tablets isn't required under state law, and they're not involved in the actual vote counting process. Check-in can also be done by hand. The clerk's office is mailing out ballots July 22nd. It will test voting equipment again October 13th, ahead of the November 4th general municipal election. Summit County is a financial supporter of KPCW. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Well, there is no Summit County Council meeting this week, but I am joined on the phone by the county's new Housing Authority Director, Maddie McDonough. Good morning, Maddie. Thanks for joining us.
Morning. How are you doing?
Doing great. Thanks so much. Maybe you can tell us a little bit, just start by giving us a little bit of background on the county's decision to form a housing authority and tell us why it was needed.
Yeah, so this housing authority has been in several years in the making, and the original intent was to attempt to address the issues with affordable housing that we're seeing across the county. And it's not unique to Summit County. We're seeing this all over the United States, but the effort here is to create, maintain, perhaps convert market rate units to affordable units to help our workforce and potentially also our aging population.
All right. Now, you've been with the county for how long as a planner?
About 4 years.
Okay. And then why was the housing authority job something that you wanted to take on?
Yeah, affordable housing is something that I think is a huge issue. I think it's one of the social justice, you know, crises of our era, so to speak. I sort of first saw this come, you know, the effect of housing when I was a teacher many years ago. And so it's really just stuck with me, and it's something that I'm really passionate about personally, as well as professionally. So that's what was interesting to me about it.
Yeah. So the authority itself has been named mostly county council members, but then the county of the council tipped the balance by adding a couple additional residents just because I think they were impressed by the applicants.
Yeah, that was the impression that I got as well. So we have three county council members and then four members from the public making up our 7-person board.
Mm-hmm. All right. And how many times has the authority met?
Thus far, we've met twice. Meetings are held monthly, the third Wednesday of the month, generally. So we've gotten things started, but there's definitely still a lot of work to do.
Okay. The meetings are open to the public?
They are. Mm-hmm.
All right. So maybe talk a little bit about just the plan going forward. These meetings, I'm guessing, are just kind of big picture.
Yeah, it's been a mix of both big picture and sort of immediate goals. There are a few things that the Housing Authority is hoping to accomplish within the first year, one of which is creating a strategic plan that's going to look out 5 and 10 years in the future so we can set up systems to be ready to tackle those goals moving on. A couple of the immediate things that we're working on is a utility allowance study, which is important because rent, the affordable rent and affordable mortgage payments are determined by cost of rent itself plus utilities. And if we don't know what the cost of utilities are, we can't appropriately set the rents. The next is a housing dashboard, which will provide information about housing availability and affordability in the county, as well as some other data about economic development. And then that strategic plan that I was mentioning, we're hoping to have a draft of that by the August meeting for board members to review. And it'll be looking at some programmatic areas of focus moving forward as well, because the authority of a housing authority is pretty wide-ranging, So it's going to be important for the board to make some policy decisions regarding what we're going to focus on in the short term and the long term.
Right. So has that even kind of been developed at this point? You know, what do we get our feet with, wet with first?
Yeah, there's definitely been discussion about it. We haven't made any decisions yet, but it sounds as though there's interest in doing all the research that's going to be necessary to be able to eventually provide federal programs. That's not something that we're eligible to do currently, but hoping to do moving forward. Some other ideas that have come up have been piloting a voucher program that's locally managed. So that may be in the form of rental assistance, for example. And then we're also looking at partnerships with developers around the county to try and get affordable units in the pipeline.
All right. You know, you mentioned federal programs. I mean, with federal funding, with so many programs being cut, is there yeah. money left?
That's a good question. We don't know. The thought or the from those much more learned in the area that I've heard thus far is that they believe there will be funding for these programs, but it's really up in the air at this point.
Yeah, and then when you talk about partnerships, so who are you talking about?
Anytime that the county is working with a developer on a large project, making sure that the housing authority has a seat at the table so that we can be involved in the conversations, potentially having land or units passed to the housing authority that will help with our ongoing revenue, as well as the mission of being able to create and maintain more affordable housing.
Okay, and the county recently set a goal in terms of how many affordable units they have. Refresh that for us.
Right, so there's a goal over the next 10 years to develop 1,500 affordable housing units. The Housing Authority is going to be an integral part of reaching that goal, but it's not going to be able to happen just through the Housing Authority alone. It'll be a partnership with the county and the Housing Authority ongoing. And the Housing Authority can also set goals independent of that. In addition to that, on our way to achieving that goal, there may be other areas of focus that the authority chooses to look at as well. So hopefully it'll be a really a good relationship that's, offering different perspectives on the housing issue.
Mm-hmm. And so much focus, I think, has been placed on the Snyderville Basin in terms of providing housing there, where the jobs are, where the transit is, where the shopping is. But what about the rest of the county? I mean, we've certainly got teachers in North and South Summit. We've, folks who could use some help.
Yeah, we have a goal written in our moderate income housing plan, which is a required element of the general plan, specifically focusing on incentives for creating affordable housing in Eastern Summit County. That's one of the things that the Housing Authority is going to be deciding on, is what those incentives look like. One potential idea for an incentive that's been discussed, though nothing has been decided, is the idea of, for example, if we had folks in Eastern Summit County who were interested in building an accessory dwelling unit on their property and they were willing to deed restrict it, then perhaps the Housing Authority could pay their building permit fees as an incentive for deed restricting that housing. So there are several ideas that we're looking at to incentivize housing in Eastern Summit County, but you're right that it is a little bit trickier if there isn't the infrastructure in place to be able to support it.
Yeah. And kind of looking forward, how could the Housing Authority be helpful to, say, with the Klein-Dolly property that's being looked at?
Yeah, we have a couple of representatives from the board involved in the Klein-Dolly meetings, the exclusive right to negotiate with the developer who is selected. Our hope is that we can be a part of the partnership offering affordable housing in addition to Mountain Lands and Habitat for Humanity on the site. And I think that would really help build a strong foundation for the authority moving forward. If we were able to establish a part of that partnership.
Yeah, and does the county have other property like Klein Dolly where you've got, you own the property and could put affordable housing on?
There are a couple of spots of, you know, that do exist. The question of what's going to go there, if anything, is ongoing. But I think it's just part of the Housing Authority's strategic plan is just to be available for those conversations if and when they do come up.
Okay. So again, I mean, you hope to have that strategic plan. Is that doable by the end of the year?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep. And I mean, I'm sure it's going to be an ongoing plan. It'll involve annual review to make sure that we're meeting our goals. But yeah, definitely possible by the end of the first year.
All right. And then you mentioned the meetings happen on the third Wednesdays. What time and where do you meet?
10 a.m. to 12 p.m. in the Richens Building small auditorium, typically. There's also a Zoom option, and our agendas, including the Zoom link, are available on the county meeting minutes page where you'd find any other meeting.
Okay, Maddie. Anything else you want to tell us about the authority?
I don't think so.
Okay, appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Joining me on the phone, I have Summit County Manager Shane Scott. Thanks for joining us, Shane.
You bet, Leslie. Good morning.
Good morning. Hey, I had wanted to ask you just quickly, just a little bit about the public hearing and possible decision for next Monday, the 28th. This is for the Dakota Pacific Real Estate. So what's going to happen at this meeting, this hearing?
Well, if any of your listeners followed the meeting at the Planning Commission level, I think it'll be very similar. There will be a presentation, probably albeit brief, by the staff, by the community development staff. Just expressing an overview of the project. The developer, Dakota Pacific, will have the opportunity to do a presentation as well. There will be a public hearing on that at that meeting, and then there will be an opportunity for me to make a decision or not.
All right, and this decision is based on what, legislation that came out of this year's session?
So Senate Bill 26 was passed this session, which essentially codified or rezoned the Dakota Pacific area for the development that was also approved on December 18th by the council. Those are separate actions, but they both did essentially the same thing. So this Senate bill created an administrative process whereby ultimately I am able to either approve or deny it based on an administrative process that the Senate Bill 26 set up.
Yeah, now with the possibility of the referendum being on November's ballot for residents to decide whether or not Dakota Pacific goes through, what does it mean if voters approve it?
If voters approve the ballot?
Yeah.
On November?
Mm-hmm.
Well, again, I'm not an attorney. I don't know every intricacy to this situation, but what I understand is Senate Bill 26 essentially set up a separate, unique track for the rezoning of this area. And in my estimation, I think I've said this on your program in the past, I think this process, if it continues and if it's approved on Monday and if Dakota Pacific ends up signing that administrative development agreement, if approved on Monday, that would make the referendum moot. It would make and of course, you know, the judge can decide to do whatever they will do with that information. But in my estimation, those two are separate tracks, and the December 18th decision is no longer valid because there's another method by which Dakota Pacific is able to move forward with the development.
But isn't that how our legal system works? I mean, we got to decide the first legal challenge before we can move on to a new.
This is a unique situation in my career, in my estimation, in what I've seen. It is something that the legislature passed. They make the laws of the land, and they set up a law that allows this to be developed here. And again, if it goes forward as it could, that makes those two processes separate. There's also, as you know, the preliminary municipality That's a third option. So also separate from this, these other two processes is that option where Dakota Pacific could incorporate in this area. So that would be a third option in getting the development to move forward.
Okay. What's the latest with Recycle Utah? I've got them coming on later this hour. Are we still discussing the four-acre site with them?
Yes, absolutely. I believe from my understanding, and of course I don't want to speak for them, they can do that later today, but my understanding is they did evaluate that four-acre site a little bit more in depth over the last couple of weeks. I think they have some interest in what they could do there in moving operations. I think they have some funding challenges, and I think those funding challenges are still being addressed between Park City, Summit County, and Recycle Utah. I think the Summit County, for our position, we've taken the position all along. We'd like to donate the property, and we believe it's worth millions of dollars, $6-7 million. And we think that would be a good location for the operations that they are currently doing at the Munchkin site in Park City. If they would like to just take that site and move it here, that they're welcome to do that. And that was kind of how we've approach that. I think they have some interest, and we'll let them talk later about what that interest is. I just think they have some funding challenges that they're trying to overcome.
Okay. And other than the land, is the county going to help at all?
That's to be determined. It probably wouldn't be my choice. As I think you know, Jana came on your program a couple of weeks ago and talked about a process that the county is going through to evaluate our current solid waste, recycling, diversion, zero food waste. We're trying to partner with the community foundation on that program. We're going through this process, and what we've said kind of all along over the last couple of weeks and even months is if Recycle Utah can be part of that solution, we would love that. We will partner with them and continue to hopefully meet our diversion recycling goals or do better, actually. And if they're not part of that solution, if they're not part of that long-term solution, we want to step up, and we'd like to do that. And there have been some funding opportunities through the Emergency Services Sales Tax, through increased flexibility with TRT, the Transient Room Tax, that perhaps could go through to solid waste and recycling.
All right. You've also are partnering with the Park City Community Foundation on behalf of their zero waste food program. How is the county helping here?
Well, we've provided some funding to that program, and we've tried to encourage individuals to sign up, not only through the community foundation, but through the county as well. We're trying to increase that. Well, again, I think that others can talk better to that later on your program. But we actually took a tour. I think you talked about that with Chris Robinson last week, or Connor did, down to Salt Lake, where they're doing some food waste through the Wasatch Front Waste and Recycling Special Service District. We looked at their financial model, how they're serving their customers, what their diversion rates are, and we'd like to take some of that back to us and model that as well in what we do today and in the future as well.
All right, and finally, just wanted to ask you about the seniors. Apparently, you've been meeting with the Park City seniors.
No, we haven't. We do have a meeting with Park City and probably some of the seniors, I think maybe next month, but we haven't met with them much. I know Park City is going forward with that senior center. I'm not exactly sure where that is, but Leslie, we're just starting the budget process for fiscal year 26, and of course the seniors will work with Jessica in our senior division to provide some budget requests that we'll address for fiscal year 26, so we'll look to do that. We'd love to meet that the request as best we can, but I actually don't even know what they are yet, so okay. I haven't seen what those are, whether that is ongoing operations, helping with the building, that kind of thing. So
yeah.
We're still waiting to see.
Well, I think they're hoping to open 5 days a week as opposed to the 3 days a week as well. So
right.
That would take money as well. Okay, Shane, anything else you wanted to add?
I don't think so. We're off tomorrow, so no Summit County Council meeting tomorrow. Wishing everybody a happy Pioneer or Pine Deer Day, however you celebrate that, and we'll be back on the 30th for our next Summit County Council meeting.
Okay. Shane Scott, appreciate your time.
Thank you, Leslie.
That's Summit County Manager Shane Scott. Park City Community Foundation have partnered to offer some free food waste collection to new residential customers. In the studio with details, I have the Executive Director of the Community Foundation, Joel Zero, along with Board Member E. Sue. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
E, maybe you can briefly explain the Zero Food Waste Incentive Program and its goals.
Well, thank you for having us here. We are 1 year into our Zero Food Waste Initiative. We launched that in June of 2024, and we are... Now, 1,200 households have signed up for this initiative, and they are composting and collecting their food waste, and it's going to a local composting facility. But today we want to be here to tell you the latest development. We have a partnership. Summit County has partnered with us for an incentive structure that is basically making the food waste. If you're a new customer for this food waste initiative, you will have your food waste collection free from now until the end of the year. So it's, we are so excited about Summit County supporting this initiative. And this is what Zero Food Waste has been all about. It's about the community coming together. It's the nonprofit, it's a space with the government and our citizens, working together to reduce the land, what's going into our landfill, divert our waste, and make Park City a better place to live.
Yeah, so how would that work? I mean, for them to get free collection?
Well, it's all set in place. If you're a new customer and you have not signed up for Zero Food Waste and the food collection with Momentum, with our partner Momentum Recycling, go to the website. It's parkcitycf.org/curbside collection. You could sign up, and it's once you pay the $25 startup fee, it's $50 if you're getting the larger bin, and it's all put in place. It's going to be free until the end of 2025, until the money that was granted runs out. So, do it as soon as you can. We've already had, I believe, Joel, is it like 100 signups or
yeah,
more?
Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah, since we started this incentive.
Do you want to tell folks about the incentive program if you already are a customer and if you refer someone?
Yes, for those of you who have been already customers of our food collection, and thank you so much for being one of the first people to sign up. If you refer a new customer, you will get 2 months free. So that new customer just needs to put your name in and your phone number, and 2 months free for those loyal customers.
Yeah, and what is that monthly fee?
Monthly fee, it's $19.50, I believe.
For the
small bin.
And then I think around $26 for the bigger bin.
Okay, and that's a monthly charge going forward.
That's right.
And people can cancel at any time?
People can cancel at any time. There's no contract. But it's great. People sign up. You find that the amount of garbage that you're bringing to your regular bin just completely declines. And the food waste is going to compost, and we're trying to create this regenerative cycle so that it's not going into the atmosphere, but instead it gets to go to agriculture.
Yeah. Any idea how much food Summit County residents are tossing?
Well, we've already diverted 700 tons. 700 tons from local Park City households has been diverted in the last year. That's a lot. And we've also saved about $100,000. I think it's $93,000 in terms of cost to our landfill. So this is about, saving space in our landfill. It's about saving money for our taxpayers and diverting all this waste that can, frankly, be turned into compost right here in Greater Park City.
Yeah, and is that why we're doing this? I mean, is that the number one reason why reducing food waste is such a priority, to save the landfill?
I think there are two reasons. The first is economic, save the landfill. It's very expensive to throw stuff in the landfill that doesn't need to go there. So it's an economic argument. And then secondly, there's a climate argument to be made. When food goes into the landfill, it decomposes and creates methane, and methane is much worse for the environment than carbon. It just retains heat a lot longer.
Yeah, so what was the amount that Summit County came up with?
I think it was $40,000 to $45,000.
Okay.
And if more customers sign up than we have incentives, that's a great problem to have, and we'll tackle that and make sure we extend it. The reason the county wanted to join us is they recognize the economic argument. It makes sense, and this is a system we need to put in place countywide.
Now, is this only a residential program, or can restaurants be part of it as well?
Well, we also just recently launched a restaurant cohort. It's the first cohort supported by the Park City Community Foundation and our partners, the Chamber of Commerce, which is a cohort of, I believe we have 11 to 13 restaurants who are learning about how they can implement food collection and composting within their operations. So they are, we've partnered with a consulting firm that's helping them individually go through, you know, their operation procedures and how they can be effective in food waste and in collecting food waste and composting. So we're excited about that, and so we're excited to expand what we're doing at Community Foundation to the commercial space too.
All right. And I think unlike traditional residential composting piles, this, you can scrape anything off your plate into the bin. I mean, let's say you had a lobster. Can everything go in?
Lobster could go in, though I recommend holding onto those shells and making a nice broth with it. Yeah, they're called fogs. So fats, oils, what's the G? We'll call it greens. So anything can go into, anything compostable can go into the bin.
Okay. What's not compostable? I mean, so even a piece of steak is compostable?
Piece of steak, absolutely. Steak, bone, anything organic can get composted.
Okay.
Super simple. Scrape the plate, stick it in the dishwasher. You're good, and you feel virtuous.
Yeah, right. which you can't do, again, with your home composting pile, right?
That's right.
It's only, yeah, organic matter without bones and meat and oils.
And it's not smelly. You get a little kitchen caddy. You scrape it in. You bring it out to the bin. Maybe every now and then you want to hose out your big bin that's in your garage. It's very simple to do. It doesn't stink.
It is very easy. My husband, my kids, we all do it. And, you know, after the first period of learning how to do it, it was like, okay, this is something, you know, my kids are now saying that should go in the compost.
Good. So is this program reaching all areas of the community? I mean, are we including our underrepresented or underserved members?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Momentum Recycling does have a pickup area. It's most of Summit County, though when you go onto the website, you'll see a map of the collection area. We have done particular outreach to our lower income communities. It is fine if you're in a multi-unit house or an apartment building. We've got a great program at Slopeside, right at the base of Canyons. So we're doing a lot of outreach to all community members.
Yeah, and in terms of geographic region, you know, we're in Park City. We are now picking up in Camas and Francis and some Oakley, Payoa. And we have waiting lists for other communities like Colville. We just need enough customers there to make it, you know, to have some mass there.
Yeah.
But so if it's not serving your community now, sign up for a wait list. And when we have enough customers in that area, we'll be able to start operations.
Yeah. Now, as you mentioned, the program was launched more than a year ago. Are you getting the buy-in that you had hoped at this point?
Yeah, we are. We had a goal of getting 1,000 residents signed up in the first year. We're now at 1,200. Our goal going into this year is 2,000 residential customers, and we've expanded to commercial business. So that's why we started our restaurant cohort. So it's going really well. Ideally, we're creating this proof of concept that will be able to scale countywide and eventually have the county or city or some other partner take it over.
Mm-hmm. And it's 1,200 households, I believe. Yeah.
That's right.
So yes. So it's actually a lot more people who are composting when you think about the individuals.
Yeah. And I guess, I mean, what benchmarks or success metrics are you using to say that this is doing what it's supposed to do?
Yeah, we created the goals thinking what is the level of scale that proves the concept and makes it economically viable for Momentum to scale their operations. So it's an interesting partnership between a nonprofit and a for-profit entity. We want them to be profitable. We want them to invest in our community. But that took initial capital to get it up and going and these incentives. And we're hitting that tipping point now. We've got this great partnership. They want to be here and they want to expand services. That's exactly what we want businesses to do.
And we intentionally wanted to be ambitious with this because, again, we believe in the spirit of the collaboration across our community that can come together and do something for good.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention about that program before I move on?
Everyone should join.
Can sign up.
Yes. People should, and if you have any questions, just reach out to me at joel@parkcitycf.org. Happy to answer. Go on the website. Super clear. You should do it.
Yes, be part of this. It's really fun. It's great. It's great to feel. It's great to feel clean in this way that your waste is going in the appropriate space.
All right, Joel. What else going on the foundation? Of course, last week you handed out $150,000 from the Women's Giving Fund to some nonprofits. What else you got going?
Yeah, that was an extraordinary afternoon with 350 women joining us. It's been a busy summer. It started off with a partnership with the school district, and the We All Belong Kindness Awards. Went around and awarded those. We had our summer solstice celebration with Vail Epic Promise, where we raised close to $80,000 for early childhood by auctioning off decommissioned chairlifts. We are in the midst of our community fund grants consideration. We're gonna be giving close to $500,000 in grants to local nonprofits. That will be done later this summer. So it's been a very, very busy summer.
Okay. Anything else you guys want to add? Got it?
Great community.
Okay. Joel Zero, EE Sue, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you for your support.
In the studio now with an update from Recycle Utah, I have Executive Director Jim Bedell along with former Director Carolyn Warr. Good morning.
Morning,
good.
Leslie.
Jim, we'll start with you and just kind of hit off with the latest on the proposed $25 million, 30,000 square foot regional facility for Summit County. Where are we in with a new center?
Yeah, that seems to be the topic of the day. I heard some of your previous guests talking about that. I think the answer on that, which is just to remind everybody, the proposal that was made by our experts from RRS who came in to advise Recycle Utah and the community about what our long-term diversion needs are, is that seems to be on the back burner at this point. From Recycle Utah's perspective, it is the action we'd like to take. We think we need to make that investment as a community now to get our diversion rate up, but we respect the fact that, first of all, we don't have the funding to pay for it. We're a nonprofit. We'd be happy to operate that, but we can't build it. And the people who can build it, which would be the city and the county, have said they'd like to table that for the time being, so we respect that.
All right, but are we still planning to kind of move ahead with the installation of these small collection centers and then bring them to the 4 acres for doing basically what you're doing now, just with a little bit more elbow room?
Yeah, I'll tell you, as you heard earlier from Shane, these discussions are still ongoing. They've accelerated recently, and we're certainly hopeful that they will come to a head sometime soon because, I don't know if anybody said this morning, but as I think the community knows, in 343 days, we've been asked to evacuate our current site, and we will no longer be collecting material. So the clock is very much ticking. Our approach at Recycle Utah has been to continue to be focused on the long-term needs of the community, as I just said, but recognize that there will be a significant gap in our recycling collection as a community in 343 days. So we are very focused on doing whatever we can do to help create an interim facility to bridge that gap and perhaps increase our diversion.
Yeah, so what will you need at that location, at that 4 acres? You'd need infrastructure, right? Utilities.
Correct. You need a building, you need utilities, you need access for vehicles, so that means paving the facility. And beyond that, not much. I mean, those of you who are familiar with our current facility, we basically have pavement and a shed. And replicating that, hopefully on a slightly larger scale, to enable us to accept more material, including possibly food waste out there, depending on the size, that's the short-term goal.
Yeah. And are the utilities out there at this point? Because we have so much development. Did they extend all of that?
Yeah, I'm the wrong person to give you a definitive answer on that. And I don't even want to say what I think we've heard from the county. You'd be better off asking them. There are utilities nearby. Clearly, High Valley Transit has two facilities out there that are operating.
Yeah. So are you kind of moving ahead with a plan to do some fundraising so that you can build something?
Well, our viewpoint for as long as I've been involved in the organization, and Carolyn mm-hmm. perhaps can speak even further back, is the role of Recycle Utah in waste diversion is to operate facilities, not build them. There is not a nonprofit in the country that we are aware of that has built waste management infrastructure. There are some great role models for us of places that operate it. We've talked about Boulder and Ann Arbor, and even up in Jackson, Wyoming, where they merged the nonprofit into the government organization years ago. But our role is not to build waste management infrastructure. We have said constantly that we would be happy if we're selected to operate the facility, as we are today, to raise whatever funding we need for infrastructure that we need to operate. So balers, sorters, collection facilities, et cetera. But it's not our job to build a facility.
Yeah, so what does happen in 343 days?
That's a good question. At this point, we met yesterday with some members of the city's infrastructure just to talk about the practical logistics of us leaving the site, making sure it's an appropriate state for them when they take it over. We're hopeful that something will be available for us to move to, but that is very much out of our control at this point. We've had some very good discussions recently. The county had requested at a public meeting in June that we come to them with a proposal of what could be accomplished out at Lot 4, and we've spent time with their staff looking at that. We sent them a written proposal. We had a follow-up meeting 2 weeks ago. I think there's some clarity about what would need to happen out there in order for a structure to be built and what size structure might be built. The next step, not to be playing ping pong or tennis here, but I think we're waiting to hear back from the county as to what they would propose to build out there.
All right, you do have to have that Bonanza Park site vacated by September 1st. Your plan is to be out of there by June 30th.
Yeah, and just to be clear, because many people have misunderstood the dates, September 1st, 2026. I can't tell you the number of people who came in on June 30th this year thinking we were closing the next day. So we do have a year, but a year's not a lot of time in terms of building a new structure.
All right. Okay, let's move on to some of your upcoming events. The big one, of course, the 100-mile meal. This is going to be the 10th anniversary,
yeah.
Carolyn.
Mm-hmm. The Recycle Utah's 100-mile meal fundraiser is on Saturday, August 16th from 5 to 10 p.m. We'll be at Mint Mountain Logs at Park City Mountain Resort. It's our celebration of local food and farmers to celebrate eating local value, make a difference in your food footprint. All of it at this event comes from within 100 miles of Recycling Center. Tickets are available on recycleutah.org.
Okay, tickets are going for how much?
The $300.
Okay.
We also have the opportunity this year to, for people who either can't attend or would like to make an additional donation, we have about 40 farmers that join us each year, people who grow or produce the local produce that we use, and we've typically offered them free seats. This year, for $150, we're giving residents the opportunity to actually buy a seat for the farmer, and those funds will flow to Recycle Utah.
Okay. Do you know what the menu is going to look like at this point?
We don't, but every time we have these meetings, it's just, it's really exciting. Sally Rinderconnect, who's been a longtime volunteer for us, works with local farmers and ranchers and producers and basically comes up with a list of things that they're willing to contribute. And then we sit down with the Park City Mountain team and have these just incredibly exciting discussions about what they can do with that. Mm-hmm. So the menu is close to being finalized now, but we're not quite ready yet, Leslie, to say what it is.
Okay. Some good news here. You've got not one, but two hazardous household events coming up in September.
Correct. Yeah, the second one chronologically, but probably the most important for most listeners, is our regular semi-annual Household Hazardous Waste Day, which we will be holding at the Silver King parking lot at the Park City Mountain. In past years, people remember that we used to do that at the Cabriolet lot, but that's under construction. So we did the spring event at Silver King. It worked quite well, and the resort has kindly allowed us to use that again. So that's September 27th, and we are still finalizing details on that. They'll be available on the website. Everybody has about 2 months to collect materials and get them ready to bring to us. The other thing, which is the first time we've ever done, is we've been operating under a grant from the Department of Agriculture to provide enhanced diversion and waste management facilities in North Summit. And we'll be holding the first time ever a household hazardous waste event out there in Colville at the Legis Center parking lot on Saturday, September 13th. Now, that event is available just to North Summit residents. The grant is specifically for that part of the county. And again, as we finalize details on that, we'll post them on the website. But we're really excited about two opportunities to collect more hazardous material and keep it out of the landfill.
Mm-hmm. All right. We got a greens drink coming up.
Not until September, yeah. And we're not ready to discuss the details of that yet because I didn't bring them with me today. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anything else that you want to mention?
No, I guess the one thing that I will mention, it's a little out of sequence here, but tonight KPCW and Park Record are hosting a forum for Park City County City Council candidates. And I was a little disturbed when I looked at a piece on KPCW's website today at the potential questions that were being discussed. There was nothing at all about diversion and Recycle Utah situation. Clearly, there's some other important issues that the community feels need to be addressed. But I would love to see, either through a moderator question or I'll be in the audience and perhaps get a chance to ask it, you know, here are candidates for city council opine on the situation we have right now. Basically, the way things stand, as we've been discussing this morning, 343 days from now, we're losing the only diversion mm-hmm. facility we have in the entire county. And despite all these good discussions that are going on, there is currently no plan to replace it. So I'd love to hear what those candidates have to say about that.
Okay, you'll be there. Mm-hmm. I think you'll have an opportunity.
Yeah. Great.
Okay, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Carolyn Ward, Jim Bedell from Recycle Utah. Well, the 56th annual Kimball Arts Festival returns to Park City's Main Street next month. Tickets are now available for the 2025 event that will be held Friday, August 1st through Sunday, August 3rd. The annual festival brings in artists from across the country for 3 days of art, live music, and food. Festival director Hillary Gilson says nearly 200 artists will get to share their works this year.
We have about 10% of local artists to the Wasatch back, and then we have about 30% of local artists to Utah.
About almost 80% of the artists are new to the festival. Gilson says some repeat artists will be on the street, including the Kimball Arts Center's own Young Artists Academy.
They have their own booth again on Heber Avenue. And then new this year, our clay students, our advanced clay students, will have their own booth in Miners Park. So that will be all wheel thrown, hand building, student artwork from people that create at the Kimball Arts Center.
Locals Night, Friday, August 1st, is free for Summit County residents. However, you must reserve free tickets in advance. Go online to Kimball. Artcenter.org. Gilson says volunteers are also needed to carry out a successful event.
Volunteers and artists are the backbone of our festival. If you volunteer through us, you get a pass for the whole weekend of the festival.
Cars are not allowed on Sweet Alley or Main Street during the festival. The China Bridge parking garage is accessible through the upper entrance on Marsac Avenue. The best way, though, to get to the festival is with free public transit or riding your bike. The festival will be offering a free bike valet on 7th Street. Well, Heber City police are searching for suspects after two people were stabbed at a restaurant downtown over the weekend. KPCW's Grace Dorfler reports.
Heber officers found two men with stab wounds at the Junction restaurant around 11:40 p.m. Sunday. Officers said the stabbings happened during a birthday party at the restaurant near the intersection of 189 and 40. Partygoers said the suspects left the restaurant before officers arrived. A 34-year-old man had been stabbed in the abdomen and a 21-year-old man was stabbed in the leg. Heber Police Sergeant Josh Weishar said the 34-year-old was flown to the hospital in critical condition. The 21-year-old was treated and released that night. Weishar said details, including the cause of the stabbing and the identities of others involved, remain under investigation. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
And Basin Recreation staff say they're contending with vandalism and trespassing after closing the Willow Creek Park Pond to protect wildlife. Basin Rec opted to temporarily close the pond off of Old Ranch Road because rangers saw more dog-wildlife conflicts than normal this year. Ranger Supervisor Aaron Williams told KPCW people even encouraged their dogs to chase a family of young ducklings using the pond as a resting area. Basin Recreation District Director Dana Jones says some parkgoers have not respected the closure since it was posted July 8th.
We still have had some vandalism, people taking the gates off the hinges to get in and stealing the closure signs.
She says it's imperative for dog owners to be able to control their pets, including maintaining voice recall, even in the off-leash areas.
We really need to be able to rely on people and positive behaviors.
Basin Recreation staff are evaluating the closure every week to determine when to reopen the area.